During Robert Brogdon's Olathe Buick GMC clearance event, save up to 20% on new models like the 2023 Buick Encore GX or GMC Sierra 1500. View their huge inventory at robertbrogdon.com and find your perfect match.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
You know, he does it kind of like a dead fish.
Weekdays from 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Today it's The Zone without Jason Anderson. I'm Joshua Briscoe, sliding over from one chair to the other. Still Beards McFly on the other side of the glass, and presumably expect to have the return of Mr. Anderson coming tomorrow on tomorrow's show. Just me and Beards here, though, for the next couple hours with you here. Hopefully you'll stick around. Hopefully Craig Brown didn't hang up upon learning this information. It just hit me that I didn't tell him that Jason wasn't here today or that I would be the one asking him the questions on this Monday. Hopefully, Craig, you're just in a good enough mood right now, Royals-wise, that even I can't throw you off.
You know what? We're just letting the kids play, right?
That's right.
So it's all good. It's all good. Thanks for having me on today.
Oh, no, thank you for making the time. And as we've always and often said, you know, Jason's kind of the Whit Merrifield of this show. And I hope he's enjoying Toronto. I don't know how he's going to make it back. It's just a one-day trip to and from Toronto. It seems like a lot. But this is Craig Brown of Into the Fountains. You can follow him on Twitter at CraigBrown_KC as well. Of course, read the newsletter, IntoTheFountains.substack.com. Craig, you used a couple, one word and a few phrases that really connected with me from the newsletter that went out this morning that means you're feeling the same things I'm feeling. And oftentimes I know I can be kind of a Royals downer. Like, I'm not patient enough for prospects in baseball. The NFL draft process has totally turned my brain to oatmeal. But whenever I saw you say, hey, this was fun, and I love the phrase that this weekend the Royals played baseball worth watching, and that just felt like such a breath of fresh air.
Well, hey, that's cool. I appreciate it. I'm glad that we made a connection through the newsletter.
We did.
it was fun, wasn't it? Yeah. I mean, it was generally good baseball. And you're right. You know, I mean, you watch the NFL draft, the NBA draft. You know, I mean, you're looking at guys that you've seen play before at the collegiate level generally, and you know they slot right in and start performing. Baseball, it's different. It takes time, and it takes time at the big league level too. So you know what we saw, you know, Saturday and Sunday. I mean, that's not, you know, what we're going to see every weekend or every game. Obviously, there's going to be bumps and bruises along the way, but these guys, they're having fun, you know.
Yeah.
There's a quality about this team now that feels like, now that certain players have moved on that we don't really need to talk about anymore. Mm-hmm. There's just kind of it seems like a cloud has lifted.
Yeah.
And also, you know, the Royals are clearly committed to the young players at this point. They have to be, but these guys are generally ready to play. We've seen it. You know, they're not going to be successful every time out. You know, that's baseball, right? Three out of 10, you know, that's a really good rate if you're up at bat. You know, you expect to win a few more games than 3 out of 10, obviously. Mm-hmm. But, this team is, it feels like it's on the right path. And it feels like we do have a reason to watch the last couple of months. Instead of a team of veterans kind of playing out the string, you've got a bunch of young guys fighting for spots, fighting to prove that they belong in the big leagues, and it looks like it's setting up for a fun couple of months down the stretch.
Yeah, it really does. And like that's all I was ever asking for from the Royals this year. I was hoping they would get us to training camp. They almost didn't get us to the draft while still kind of feeling like they were still in it all. But now that we're in the back half of the year, they could have lost 13-14 yesterday. MJ Melendez has 6 RBI. I'm gonna say, hey, there's something we can hang our hat on. Now that would have, brought a little bit of a cloud back, because it would have probably meant some pretty bad things for Brad Keller or the bullpen. So maybe I'm exaggerating. But like let's start with Melendez, because you've seen everything from the leadoff homer to the effort yesterday. Where are you landing right now on what we've learned about MJ Melendez in his time as a major leaguer so far?
I mean. I'm enthusiastic about it. I think that he gives, you know, some really good at bats. You know, the strikeout rate might be, you know, a little bit up there, but the walk rate is there too. You know, so you'll take the bad with the good. You know, overall, you know, he's, you know, his numbers say that he's an above average offensive performer. He's flashed a lot of power, which we knew that he had, you know, just based on, you know, his performance last year at the minor league level. But, you know, some of these balls that he's hitting out of the yard, the fact that he's handling that leadoff spot, right? You know, like when we were all, you know, clamoring for the Royals to bring up these young guys, and, you know, J.J. Piccolo, Dayton Moore, they're all like, you know, well, you know, we don't want these young guys to feel the burden of having to carry the lineup, right? They can do it. I mean, you're hitting MJ Melendez leadoff for crying out loud, and he's hitting the ball over the fence. He's starting the game, you know, with homers, or he's coming up with a big hit in the middle of the game. He's driving the ball. You know, at times, you know, again, he may look a bit overmatched at the plate, but again, that's to be expected. He's still, you know, figuring things out. But overall, you know, I think it's just it's a really positive development the way that he's slotted into the lineup. And the Royals are also throwing things at him too that I think that we have to. That we have to keep in mind, they're playing him all over the field, right? I mean, he didn't look great in left field this weekend. I think he's looked okay in right, and even behind the plate, though, you know, some of his throws, you know, haven't been, you know, super sharp what you would like. But he's a guy that with Salvador Perez on the team, you know, he's going to be moving around, you know, rotating positions, playing DH. That's not easy either for a young player. So he's really done quite well with the bat, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, so, and then defensively, I mean, you touched on it, but where do you think he slots in long term? Like, if I made you bet where he's going to be playing opening day next year, what's his spot going to be?
You know, I mean, I think that it might ultimately be in right field. You know, with the Royals keeping an eye towards moving him off that position, if that makes any sense. You know, I think that long term it's catcher, but, you know, obviously while Salvador Perez is, you know, still, you know, on the team, that's his spot. It's nice to have Melendez, you know, there as a more than capable basically backup catcher.
Yeah, right.
You know, to give Perez the rest. You know, and when Perez isn't catching, you know he's going to be DH. I think that, you know, going forward, we're going to see a lot of rotation for a lot of these guys because, again, unless they make a move, which, you know, they could ultimately decide to do to bring in some pitching or something like that. But we've got a lot of first base DH types on this team. Mm-hmm. You know, a couple of quality catchers. They got to find spots for them. So that includes, you know, guys like Prado, Pasquantino. You know, and so, you know, I feel like there's going to be rotation, you know, going forward. It's just kind of the way that this roster is. You know, and MJ Melendez is a hard worker. I mean, we know this. And, you know, I think that he'll adapt to the outfield. I also think that, you know, after watching, you know, Duran play center field for the Red Sox over the weekend, outfield isn't as easy as you know, some of these guys make it look. And, yeah. And so it's hard to track that fly ball. He's going to get better at it. It's just going to take a little bit of time.
Also, on the rookie class front, it's kind of funny watching Bobby Witt Jr. not be the guy for a little bit, which, you know, they talked about this in the broadcast some yesterday. I thought it was a good point. You can't let anybody be the guy that has to carry the weight all the time. And yesterday, it's, you know, doing it with Salvi having an 0-for day from the DH spot and Bobby Witt being pretty quiet until, I think, real late in the game yesterday. And you've written about his defensive spots, which I want to get there as well. But whenever you have a group suddenly where you're able to look up and down the lineup and find other guys who can step in, I think for me that might be the most encouraging takeaway from this series, to see that kind of gelling together. I guess it started a little bit before the break potentially too as well, but I don't know. Am I reading too much into that? Or are you willing to say that this team is decently well-rounded with the young guys now?
Yeah, it does feel that way, although I do think, I mean, I've got a lot of confidence in Bobby Witt Jr.
Yeah.
I mean, I think eventually, you know, he kind of emerges as as the guy, the catalyst in this offense. But, you know, right now it does – I mean, there are a lot of quality hitters in this lineup, yeah. Young quality hitters, and so it can be, you know, any night, you know, like you know, if Bobby Witt Jr. scuffling, you know, a Prado, a Pasquantino, Melendez, there's plenty of guys to pick up, you know, the leader on this team. It's not going to be like Royals offenses that we've seen in the past, which we've seen even this season, right, when Salvi was out early on, you know, and the team, you know, I wrote at the time, after he came back, you know, which is, again, just miraculous. The guy is just superhuman that he can come back from thumb surgery and be just hitting the crap out of the ball like he is. But, you know, it was no coincidence that just before he came back that the Royals were shut out three games in a row, because he truly is, like, the catalyst for this offense. But these other guys are figuring out, yeah, they can help provide the spark. They can, you know, kind of carry the team from time to time. So it isn't going to just be on Perez for the rest of the season. It's not going to be just on Witt in the future. This is a collection of guys that can produce, you know, offensively. Man, maybe I'm looking at it through, you know, the royal blue colored glasses, but it just really feels like, you know, we are on the cusp of an offense that, you know, in a year or two is going to be, you know, a really solid. I don't want to get carried away. Let's just say an above average major league offense, which is not something that we've seen a lot of in Kansas City. So that's going to be a really exciting thing.
Yeah, I think at this point with the baseball that we have spent the last several years watching, if anybody is like, oh, I just don't want to get too excited about all these young guys who all look really good at the same time, I feel like that maybe you've lost the joy of baseball. You know, like you can enjoy it a little.
Oh, yeah, get excited. I mean, you know, people were you know, have commented to me on Twitter or at the newsletter saying, you know, that you know, hey, they've cashed out, they've moved on, you know, Chiefs season's coming up. You know, all that sort of stuff. And I mean, you know, hey, it's up to you. I'm not going to tell anybody how to fan, but right. You know, I mean, you watch, and yeah, there's going to be games that you're going to be disappointed, but there's also, you know, some excitement. And the cool thing about that excitement is it's not, you know, a guy like a Benintendi who is, you know, was clearly on his way out, you know, mm-hmm. either via trade or free agency, but these are guys that are going to be here for, you know, several years. We are watching the nucleus of future Royals teams kind of form, yeah. Which it's again, it's really exciting. It takes you back to 2011 when Hosmer and Moustakas and those guys were just coming up. Perez too, you know, you saw it at that time. It took, you know, obviously 3 years to work. You know, hopefully it doesn't take that long. But you know, again, we're seeing movement. We're seeing progress. And you know, for a team that was on pace for 100 losses early in the season, mm-hmm. that's all you can ask for at this point.
Absolutely. Yeah, we don't. Who knows what? If we're going to look back in 2 or 3 years and go, if this was not even close to the Hosmer Moustakas, you know, maybe we will realize that in the future. But right now, we're going to be watching these guys play baseball for the next several years. And if you cared about the Royals in April, you ought to check back in now. I think it's a little more fun. One of the other young guys I wanted to mention specifically because of the walk off is Nick Prado. I think he has one more base hit than he does walk on the year now, which is he's going to have one of the more unique stat lines in the second half of the season. I think he's fascinating to me. He had an incredible moment there. The Royals, in terms of like plate discipline amongst these young guys, obviously is a very fun conversation too. But what have you seen from Prado? What did you think when he had the walk off?
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously it was just a thrilling moment, you know, for that to happen. You know, especially, you know, Whitlock had shut the Royals down. He had retired 8 in a row coming out of the bullpen. You know, works Prado to 3-2, and I wrote about it today at Into the Fountains. And Prado it's almost 50% of the time he's walking or striking out. The strikeout rate is a little high, but we knew that we were going to get that with him. But right. We're also getting, you know, some really solid plate discipline where, as you said, you know, he's got 10 walks, he's got 11 hits. okay, you know, I mean, that's something that we haven't seen from a Royals player, you know, hardly ever.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, so when the count's 3-2, you're thinking, okay, you know, it's a walk or a strikeout. This is what generally happens. So for him to, you know, take that pitch that was kind of, you know, veering to the outer half and to muscle it over, you know, basically the center field wall, you know, that's a hell of an at-bat. It's a great result. It's a pressure situation that you know, where he comes through. You know, a fantastic moment, a signature moment, you know, in the season, because that game was a back and forth game. It was anybody's game at that point. It really was. And, you know, for him to step up, it's just, you know, a huge moment. And then to see the way that the guys rally around, you know, in that moment too, was really something to see. It, again, takes you back, you know, to the team, to the championship teams. You know, I just Prado is a guy, he's going to strike out, but mm-hmm. he does have really, really strong plate discipline, a fantastic knowledge of the strike zone. It hasn't worked out, you know, at the beginning, because again, he needs that period of adjustment, I feel, to, you know, kind of get used to the major league umpires, to see some major league pitching. And, you know, once he gets locked in on that zone up here, I think he's, you know, going to be fine. So, you know, again, just a really positive result. You know, a fantastic moment in a season that's, you know, been kind of a struggle.
And also, just the absolute point of the rest of this season is just, hey, just see if all these guys look more comfortable in these various spots they need to get more comfortable in, the rest of this season is an unequivocal success. Like, I would take that
absolutely
100% of the time. One place that I did not expect to have to talk about getting more comfortable in is Bobby Witt Jr. at shortstop. That's something else you wrote about in today's newsletter. Again, intothefountains.substack.com if you want to read that there. Can you walk me through a little bit of your underwhelmed current nature on Bobby Witt at short and what the Royals' options might be?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it seems like he's, you know, struggling with some of the more, you know, routine aspects. You know, I mean, the dude is a fantastic athlete. Mm-hmm. He can make, you know, the highlight reel play. We've seen it. You know, some of these jump throws that he's made going into the hole, just he is capable of, let's just say, extreme highlight, you know, plays. But then there's just, you know, some other stuff. I the error that he made, you know, this weekend, it was a tough play. It was an in-between hop. But it was one that I kind of felt like, you know, a major league shortstop should, you know, be fielding. Overall, the metrics, and I know that people will turn up their nose at metrics, and I get it, you know, defensively. They're far from perfect. But when you talk about defensive runs saved, you know, he's last in baseball among shortstops and by a wide margin. You know, so when I look at that sort of stuff, it's like, you know, I'm not trying to figure out, you know, how they reach it. Like, you know, he's minus 16 right now, which is, you know, not a great number. It's really quite bad. Instead of trying to figure out, you know, well, like, you know, how in the world is he minus 16, I look at it in relation to, you know, other guys on the list, and to see that there's just one other shortstop that is worse than minus 7 right now, you know, and defensive run save, that says a lot, that he's really scuffling. And then you look at outs above average, which is a stat, you know, at Baseball Savant. He's, you know, not the worst there, but he's third worst. So, you know, again, these metrics are pretty consistent in saying that, you know, really he needs to be better. So, you know, when the Royals opened the season with him at third, you know, I thought, you know, long-term is positioned shortstop. He's earned raves coming up through the minor leagues with his ability to play the position. So I wasn't really sold on the Royals moving him off to begin with, but then I kind of, you know, reached an understanding, right? It's like, hey, they're taking a little bit of pressure off of him, you know, at short. You know, it's an important position. You know, you move him over to third, more of a reaction position, which, you know, again, Lord knows he can play. So, you know, I came to see it as, okay, maybe they're taking a little bit of pressure off of him defensively. It was working. Then, of course, you know, he moves back over to short after, you know, the Mondesi injury and all that sort of stuff. But I just wonder if the Royals wouldn't be better served, you know, having Nicky at short, which, again, you know, last year, you know, we saw, you know, he can absolutely play that position. Having Witt, you know, just kind of take a little bit of the pressure off. Back over at third, you know, keep working at short, but, you know, hey, this is kind of a short-term thing, and then, you know, see how it works, you know, next season, or as he gets a little more comfortable at the big league level. I'm sure that his comfort level is fine right now, but just something's not working. So, you know, maybe move him off the position for a little bit, try it again later on down the road, see how that goes. You know, at least the guy has the bat. You know, the bat will play at any position. The bat will carry him. So if it means he has to move to third, you know, that's fine, because I really think that he can end up being a plus defender at third, too.
Would that leave Lopez then as a long-term answer at short then defensively?
You know, I wonder about that, but, you know, again, like I was saying, you know, I would try to move, you know, Witt back over there.
Sure.
I think. You know, Nicky's looked a lot better, you know, of late, you know, offensively, and you know, you're not asking him to do a lot.
Sure.
So, you know, I think that he's a guy that, you know, is useful to have in the lineup, and can kind of serve as that catalyst down towards the bottom of the order. So, you know, I mean, I'm not averse to that, but, you know, again, when you've got a shortstop that's struggling as much with the glove as Witt seems to be right now, it just makes some sense, at least short term, to move him off that spot.
Well, let's talk about the pitching a little bit, because I think a lot of the young bats are fun to talk about. I think a lot of the young arms are, you know, trending in a positive direction as of late, but still make me more nervous than they do excited. That might be, you know, a trust issue that I have. But starting with Brady Singer over the last few outings, I'm sure... We've talked about him now a few times, but the larger the sample size gets, the more interested I've become in what is sustainable there. And then so last week, he has his worst outing in a while, which was also interrupted with the rain delay and everything. I would be willing to shrug off a little bit of that. He still got through the six innings, got hit a ton, gave up the four, and again, not an outing I'm sure he was happy with, but a strange one nonetheless, and then two excellent ones before that. Specifically to Singer, where are you right now in terms of how much you're buying the highs, where the lows might actually be, and if your view on him has changed at all in these last couple weeks?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely changed, because I was pretty low on him, you know, as a group of starters, you know. So, yeah, you know, what we saw from him at the end of July was, you know, absolutely fantastic. Really, he's done really well since he came back and, you know, has rejoined the rotation coming back from Omaha earlier this year. You know, the outing on, you know, last week, you know, you're right. The rain was one thing. You know, he was giving up a ton of hits. What I really liked about it was that he battled through the adversity, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I feel like the Singer from last year would have crumbled.
Yeah.
And wouldn't have been able to get through that. And, you know, really... You know, and the damage came on an Abreu home run, right? He gave up four runs, but three of them were on that home run.
Good point.
You know, of course, if a ball left the yard, it was going to probably score multiple runs because he had traffic on bases all day.
True, yeah.
But, you know, the pitch wasn't even, you know, if I'm remembering right, wasn't even really that bad of a pitch for him. The Abreu just went out and, you know, went opposite field, you know, muscling it over the fence. You know, so you know, I think... You know, you're not going to strike out, you know, double digits every time out. You're not going to pitch into the seventh every time out, giving up just one hit. You know, you're going to have games where you don't have your best, which is something that we've heard from Singer a lot, right? Mm-hmm. You know, like in 2021, it was like, you know, hey, Brady, you got hit pretty hard. Well, you know, my slider wasn't working, my sinker I couldn't locate, and, you know, it was a rough day. You know, and you know, that was kind of the case, you know, here, you know, last week, but he was able to work around it. You know, the funny thing about that one was the little comebacker that came to him, you know, where he had to break towards the third base side, field it, and throw. It was a throw that he shouldn't have made, right? Mm-hmm. It was a bad decision, but he actually hit the target, which, again, you know, these little things that I'm looking at, that was a, to me, that was a big deal. That was a dangerous moment. Last year, he throws the ball away.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And this year, he threw a strike to first. You know, and again, an ill-advised throw, but hey, we're making progress here. You know, he threw a strike. So it's just, he's a different pitcher this year. He's a different guy. He's working with tempo. He's confident. And, you know, I think that that's kind of, you know, what's propelled him, you know, so far this season. So, you know, a bumpy outing, you know, against the division rival, you know, it's going to happen. And, you know, the fact that he got through six, gave up just four, that's a positive for me.
Yeah. Anybody else right now have anything that has changed your view on them pitching wise over these last couple of weeks? I think for better or for worse, you could probably pick from a few. But looking at Lynch and Bubich in particular, do you feel like you have a read on what they are yet, or is that still evolving?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's still evolving. But I was going to mention Bubich. I think that he's shown a lot, and expectations for him, at least as far as I'm concerned, have been kind of low. You know, seeing him as a back of the rotation guy, that ultimately may be, you know, his destiny on this team. But I mean, he's showing that he's more than capable of stringing together a run of really good starts. You know, not going to strike out a lot of guys, but you know, he's you know, we've seen him, you know, work up in the mid 90s. With the fastball that we hadn't seen, you know, previously. You know, the command is there. You know, he'll keep the ball in the yard. You know, really, really been impressed with the way that he's worked of late. Lynch has always been my favorite of that class of 18, as, you know, quote unquote the guy. You know, I mean, I really think that, you know, in 4 years' time, you know, when we're looking back at all these arms that the Royals have run through here, you know, I think that Lynch will probably be, you know, the best of the bunch. And he's, you know, again, taken some steps forward. It looks like he may have to fight Brady Singer for that, you know, which is a great thing for this team to have. So yeah, you know, I mean, for me, it's Bubich, you know, that I'm really impressed with, you know, what he's done over the last, you know, several starts that he's had. Lynch remains a guy, you know, definitely in that, you know, equation. So now they got to get a couple of the other arms, you know, firing to kind of, you know, fill out the rest of that rotation. But you know, it's a nice foundation, you know, that it's looking like, you know, from those three starters that we're talking about. Again, you know, reason for some cautious optimism. The pitching, it's a little riskier. I mean, that's just the nature of pitching. And of course, the Royals' track record developing pitchers, not great, you know. So they deserve the skepticism until, you know, we see, you know, consistent quality results. But again, looking at it, you know, big picture, definitely looks and feels like they're onto something, moving in the right direction.
Last thing that you wrote about briefly, and we've mentioned his name already, talking about what it was like back in 2011, 12, 13, etc. But I'm just was interested if you felt some nostalgia, or if anything bubbled up from the past when Eric Hosmer spent some time in Kauffman this weekend.
You know, it was fun to see him back there. Those teams that, you know, were just obviously for me, for you, for everybody listening, an absolute highlight, you know, 14 and 15. You know, so it's nice to see him come back. And you know, he hit the ball hard a couple of times, you know, didn't do, you know, horrific damage to the Royals, which is a good thing.
Yes, ideal.
But, you know, yeah, so it's fun to see these guys come back. And, you know, there's not a lot of Royals from that team from that era that who are still playing, which, you know, I mean, time marches on, man. It's you know, the life of an athlete, it's, you know, it's crazy. So, you know, the Royals at least have, you know, Salvi back there, you know, hanging around from the team. So it's nice when those guys come back and get to take another, you know, ovation, and you've got that moment. And I wrote about it, you know, a little bit in the newsletter. It was fun for that nostalgic moment, and then the kids, you know,
yeah,
took hold and reminded everybody that, you know, the past was fun. It was a great time. But now the Royals, it's about the future, and it's about the young arms, the young bats, and trying to do it again. That's kind of the blueprint that we're looking at. They're trying to get back. It's taken a little bit too long for everybody, yeah. Absolutely. But again, you know, it just felt like, hey, after this weekend, it's about the future, and it's about being on that right path.
You can read about that future, the path the Royals are on, if they stay on the right one or not, all in Into the Fountains. That's intothefountains.substack.com. You can follow Craig on Twitter at CraigBrown_KC. Craig, appreciate your insight all the way through the season to this point. We'll chat again soon.
Hey, sounds good. Thanks a lot for having me on. Enjoyed it.
That's Craig Brown. Did he say enjoyed it more than talking to Jason? That's what I heard. That's what I heard from me. Again, check out the newsletter. I hit the wrong button. You put me in charge. What happened there? I hung up on Craig. Sorry, Craig. I was trying to put him back on hold so you could talk to him, and then I hit the hang up button. It's been a minute since I've had to use the phone buttons. I'm out of practice. Sometimes you gotta let the kids play. They're gonna make some mistakes, you know? That was a strikeout. I hung up on Craig before I meant to. So I'll tell you one more time, intothefountains.substack.com to get his work on Twitter at CraigBrown_KC. I'm Josh Abrisco alongside Beards McFly. Two-thirds of the zone still with you, even though it is the zone without Jason Anderson for the time being. We'll go back to some Chiefs with Ryan Tracy at 1. Some more Chiefs all throughout. I got a few more Royals thoughts as well. Who knows what's next here in the zone?
You're in the zone.
I am a radio-doing machine at this point, where the only flaw is really my personality and technique and interests.
With Jason Anderson.
But the technical aspect of it, I got it down.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Thanks again to Craig Brown of Into the Fountains for joining us, as he has done so many days over the course of the zone. Not always with me, most of them without me being here. I'm Joshua Brisco. A recent addition co-hosting the zone with Jason Anderson. Jason, though, out today, so I'm in the big chair. Beards McFly still on the other side of the glass. So both of us, two-thirds of the zone with you here today. Jason should be back tomorrow, and we'll continue to, you know, do all the things that we do around here, which also includes giving away more tickets. Beards, I need to come up with another way we can give away some more tickets this segment. I think when we might even take an early break, so we make sure you got plenty of time to give some more tickets away. And Beards, are you wondering what these tickets are even to?
No, not really.
Well, I wonder if the audience is, though.
Probably not.
Do you want to ask me what these tickets are to?
Eh.
Here, just read this card where I wrote, "Hey, Josh, what are these tickets for?" Just read this note card.
Hey, Josh, what are those tickets for?
Beards, I'm so glad you asked. Thank you so very much for asking. Thank you, dear listeners, for wondering about what these tickets are for. They are for Thursday night, as we are going to have the 100-year celebration of WHB. That's us. Those are our call letters now. Obviously, Sports Radio 810 WHB is a portion of those 100 years, a big and important portion, but just a portion going back to we've got some. You may have heard the promos that were running for a while about the celebration of, you know, old, crackly, old-timey radio. WHB, like every single thing that you would imagine coming through an old-timey radio broadcast. WHB has been around for a whole lot longer than all of us. And we're going to celebrate 100 years of that Thursday night at the Midland. An absolutely bonkers list of guests. And we're giving away tickets totally free to you, the listener. So if you want to join us on Thursday night, please make sure you'll be able to be there and enjoy all the festivities. You can call in. Not right now. Phones are blocked off right now. We're going to come up with something to give some more away. We're giving away a bunch today and probably going to continue to do that tomorrow as well. So lots more chances to win tickets to Thursday night's 100 years of WHB celebration. We'll do some of that here. Probably the end of this segment as well. Just need to come up with a way to do it. How did the uniform number thing work on your end, Beards? We already covered that nobody said Chase Daniel, which was shocking to me. But other than that, how did that process work? Did you have any losers that you had to hang up on?
I had a couple of people that had called in. They were just like, "Oh, hey, did I win?" And I'm like, "Well, only if you like tell me the number of the
See.
They called too early. They didn't know what we were doing there."
Sometimes listening closely is important. All right. Do you want to decide one for the end of the break? You want to come up with some sort of basketball adjacent thing? Name an active member of the Boston Celtics, or like I don't know how you can you think about it. I'm going to give a Royals take. You think about that, and that's going to be your responsibility whenever we're trying to give away some tickets here in a little bit.
All right, thank you.
You get to give the title of one Game of Thrones book. I don't know that I would have one guess. And I don't know that I would be able to be that confident about
it. It's not that, but so give me your guess.
You're not going to do that? You don't want to
do that
one? A Story of Ice and Fire.
Nope.
Is that not one?
No.
Game of Thrones, A Story of Ice and
Fire. The whole series is called A Song of Ice and Fire.
A Song of Ice and Fire.
The first book is called A Game of Thrones.
A Game of Thrones?
Yes.
I would have gotten that wrong, too. I thought the first one was called Game of Thrones, Story of Ice and Fire.
No.
But a song...
Yes.
And I was wrong anyway.
Yes. No tickets for you.
I get it. That's why it's a game. Games have winners and losers. I was a loser of this game. By being a loser of this game, am I really the winner? I think I might be. First 500 callers to call in and then just give Beards a 3-minute long monologue about how terrible the last season of Game of Thrones, the TV show, was... All of you get
blocked.
Just call in and complain about Game of Thrones to Beards and Cyberpunk. Tell Beards that everything he loves is terrible, and I'll give you tickets. I'll bring them to your house. I will drop them off in your mailbox. None of that's true. Don't call in yet. We'll give some more tickets away over the course of the show. Beards, come up with a good idea. Here's my little quick Royals take to piggyback off the conversation we just had with Craig. I was doing Sunday Sound Off last night on KSHB 41, and part of the conversation was, hey, who is the cornerstone of this young group of players? What is the future looking like with that in mind? And look, the answer is still Bobby Witt Jr. If he is not the engine of this team going forward, fairly or unfairly, something will have gone wrong. Like that, there is not a way for Bobby Witt Jr. to not be the crux of this team. Unless, I guess, MJ Melendez just ends up being a perennial, a future, what, Royals Hall of Famer at minimum? The expectations on Bobby Witt are incredibly high, but they are earned, and he is going to have the highest ceiling out of this group. If he doesn't achieve that, who's to say what happens? But he has the highest ceiling still. Okay. That, I think, is relatively straightforward. The thing from yesterday... And the thing that MJ Melendez was able to be the guy for yesterday, and that you've seen it from Prado, you've seen it from Pasquantino, you've got Michael Massey in the mix. Like this, we're talking about Drew Waters and like what he could bring. We've got names and dudes throughout this organization right now that you can be excited about. And if you think, hey, the only thing that the Royals need is for Bobby Witt to hit that ceiling. Bobby Witt's ceiling is tremendously high, but he alone will not be enough. Have you talked to a Los Angeles Angels fan recently? Follow-up question. Have you ever met a Los Angeles Angels fan? If you have met one, and if you have talked to one recently, I'm guessing they don't behave like people that have two of the five best players in baseball. And it might be a smaller number than five, and it might be something even more bonkers like two of the X best players in baseball history. They have one of the best hitters that the sport has ever seen, and maybe literally the most dynamic player the sport has ever seen. We need to come up with what the phrasing needs to be on Shohei Ohtani, just because... Like he would be an all-star as a pitcher or a hitter, and he is both. I don't think there is a way to be too hyperbolic about how fascinating and incredible Ohtani is. Anyway, they've got two of those guys, and they stink. They're not good. They're not interesting. And they have two aliens playing for them, and they can't figure it out. Now, look, the Royals are a long way away from having Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani. So much of this is still going to depend on the pitching. but you have to have a supporting cast, a legitimate supporting cast. And in this case, it can be young guys that are getting called up around the same time. Now, what's going to happen when all of those contracts come up? That's a problem for future John Sherman. Right now, present John Sherman should be excited about what he's got. But you cannot do it alone in baseball. And that is something that I think you should take and should want to take with you from what you saw yesterday.
I was going to say, you say the Royals aren't quite there with the Angels yet. They're almost caught them in the playoff race.
So, team-wise...
They are 44-65 of the Royals. The Angels are 46-63. However, the Royals are only 13.5 games behind for the division, whereas the Angels are 23.5 behind.
Let me just check again. Hold on. I'm going to Google something. Hold on. One of those teams has Shohei Ohtani and Mike Trout on it. Google just confirmed. I Googled, do the Angels still have Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani and still are bad? And it said yes. They're 5 games up on the A's in their own division. They have 2 of the most fascinating players in baseball history. And they can't. It's useless. It's about them nothing.
Don't look at the run differential, though. The Royals are still really bad in that one.
I actually was going to look at run differential.
Negative 37 for the Angels. Royals are a minus 122.
Whoa! That is significantly worse.
That's second worst in the American League.
Anyway, it's got to be a team effort. Baseball's got too many players, and too many guys can only do one thing at a time. You only have one guy batting at a time. You can't. When you have LeBron on the floor, it makes everybody else's job a little easier. You can have Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani, but you just have 7 other guys in that lineup that need to hit a baseball. And then several guys need to be able to throw it without letting their opponents hit that baseball a very far way. So there's a lot to be excited about with the Royals right now, and for that alone to be true feels like kind of a win. Speaking of winning, let's give some tickets away. Beards, what is the mechanic going to be? Again, these are tickets to Thursday night. That's the 11th, Thursday night. At the Midland 100-year celebration of WHB. It's going to be a blast. Our guest list is ridiculous, and you can get on that guest list as well. Get your tickets. They'll be here at the station. Come pick them up. Take them with you to the Midland. We'll see you on Thursday. Let's give away... We can give away 3 or 4 tickets here. Beards are showing me... we can give away 10 pairs today. We've only given away 3.
We've given away more than 3 because I've done some online as well.
Oh, great. Okay. Well, let's give away 3 more. Let's do that.
I don't have time to do 3 in the break. I can do 2 in the break. And then we can do more next hour.
Specifically for this question of Beards, we'll keep giving more tickets away throughout the day. We'll give away 2 pairs right now. Beards, what do they have to do to win? By calling 913-3810-810. And
don't call yet because the phone's still blocked.
Don't call yet. What and what?
So I'm going to keep it the same.
The same what?
Same format as you had.
Okay.
There's no more Tyrann Mathieu now.
Okay.
So Chiefs at war number 32, excluding Marcus Allen. Because that one's kind of easy as well.
Do you want it to exclude the person who's wearing 32 this year, currently, who has not yet played a game in 32?
Yes.
Because Nick Bolton has switched to 32.
That is true.
So not Marcus Allen, not Tyrann Mathieu,
not Nick Bolton.
Call in 913-3810-810 and tell Beards McFly, a Chiefs player who has worn number 32 at any other point in Chiefs history, and win yourself a pair of tickets to the 100-year anniversary event coming up on Thursday.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
If I can't be here to try to get you on a technicality once per show, what the bleep is the point of me being here?
Weekdays from 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
It is The Zone. There is no Jason Anderson today. He'll be back tomorrow. I'm Joshua Briscoe, moving over from the little chair to the big chair. I think these chairs are exactly the same size, but, you know, metaphorically speaking. Beard still in the chair that's just right. It's like Goldilocks. Is that right? Did I get that reference right?
You got it. You're good.
I suddenly couldn't think of the phrase Goldilocks and the Three Bears. I don't know what happened there. Still thinking about Bullet Train. It's the only media I've been able to retain for the last several days. We got our winners on the Chiefs who wore number 32 before Tyrann Mathieu, but not including Marcus Allen. That one's a little bit of a layup. I looking at this list here now, I know what my answer would have been, I think. What were our winners, Beards?
First winner was for Curtis McClinton.
Okay.
A little farther back. And then the one that I was expecting, the second guy I got, and that was Spencer Ware.
Spencer Ware would have been mine. We also would have accepted. I love this bit as a way for people to win tickets because it makes you listen a little bit. You have to do a little thing to win them. You know, that's fun. But also it lets us remember some dudes.
Like Cyrus Gray.
Cyrus Gray and Sean Drone. I maintain that if his name was pronounced Sean Drone, he would still be in the league right now. And then Marcus, is that Alien? Allen. Is he also a running back? What did he do? Is he a punter? No, Marcus Allen was not available for the taking. Doug Terry, Tommy Aggie, Larry Moriarty, Ethan Horton, Tony Reed, Doug Jones, Curtis McClinton, Bo Dixon, and then Jack Johnson. That's crazy. I saw him in here a little bit ago. Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Thank you for my joke about our friend Jack Johnson. You can hear over on ESPN Kansas City, ESPN Wichita, and now sometimes nights over here on 810. He'll be on after the preseason game on Saturday, actually. So, looking forward to hearing Jack do a little preseason post-game. And then when the regular season comes back around, I will grab him and throw him off the balcony to reclaim my throne for the preseason. Be nice to have Jack on the he'll be in the big chair, which is again the same size as all the other chairs around here. We are of course not going to have time to get to all the audio that I thought we would eventually get to, perhaps after we talk to our friend Ryan Tracy. He's of RGR Football, the Locked On Chiefs podcast, does some incredible work on like every way, shape, and form you could look at the Chiefs. Ryan's been doing it for a long time. An incredibly high level. We'll talk to him about some of our training camp expectations, storylines, things we've learned so far, what he'll be looking forward to in the preseason, and what the expectations are for some of these young guys. I also continue to be very interested specifically in this running back rotation. Clyde Edwards-Helaire is clearly the guy here, I believe, but he's up first. What happens next? Ronald Jones seemed like he could be the guy that would be RB2, but can he catch passes? I don't know. Eric Bieniemy talked about that. We will maybe get that audio sometime in the 1 o'clock hour, but I know better than to make promises I can't keep. Isaiah Pacheco getting all the hype as a rookie, 7th round pick. He's getting work on special teams, looking good in the team situations as well. They also brought back Jerick McKinnon. Derek Gore had a nice year last year when he got on the field. Part of that is the nature of the position. Part of it is the guys the Chiefs actually have. We'll talk about that and a lot more with Ryan Tracy whenever we come back here in the Zone on Sports Radio 810 WHB.